Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here, and sitting across from me
is Mike Cosentino yet one more time.
Yes.
But I want to say, we filled the studio with people more interesting than you, but that's, you know, not all that real hard.
Well, who else are they more interesting than?
Than both of us, absolutely.
Right. So we do have a full studio today, folks, and we'll be talking about immigration. We'll be talking about immigration reform, and we'll be talking about the resolution by the Sedona City Council supporting comprehensive immigration reform. Since there are so many people, Mike's going to have them introduce themselves.
We are going to do that just because, you know, I'm not that smart and we've all screwed up. But I do want to talk about the trend, and we do have a Sedona City Council person here, but we'll talk about the trend of city councils and governing bodies dealing and talking about national issues, and one or more of these guests today are going to address that and tell us why it really is important. And it is kind of down at the coffee shop, the knee-jerk reaction is, why are they talking about civil union? Why are they talking about immigration? You know, the Sedona or Cottonwood or Jerome doesn't have anything to do with these. But they do, and you guys are going to kind of make that connection for us between the local and the national. I'm going to start right here on my right here. We're going to start with Ezekiel Hernandez, and he's going to tell us who he is and why he's here.
Well, thank you very much to the two least interesting guys in the room, correct? Ezekiel Hernandez, I'm an immigration attorney in Phoenix, Arizona. I've been practicing since, well, now it's 2005. I only do immigration, and came in to talk to your group this morning, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, but Ezekiel brings up a good point. We did have a forum in town this morning over at the Jewish Sedona Center, and our anchor Patrick was there. We had our representative, and she claimed she learned.
About 75 people talking about comprehensive immigration reform. And we had, Ezekiel did a great presentation about his work because he's a practicing immigration lawyer and has worked for both giant corporations, bringing in people from Singapore or India, high-tech people, and working also on he has his own office now, right? And your own practice.
Yeah, we do want to end with some contact information here, for everybody, but, we're going to come back to Ezekiel. Right now, Frankie's going to say hi.
Hi, my name is Frankie Madrid. I'm with the Northern Arizona Interfaith Council as well as Northern Arizona Pride Association. And I am a dreamer myself. I was brought to the U.S. at 3 months of age. And I also represent the Arizona Dreamers and Action Association.
What made you decide to come to the U.S. at 3 months of age?
Well, I actually didn't get to decide. My mom made that decision for me, but I'm really, really grateful that she did. And I would have to point out that our parents are the original dreamers, and her making that decision was completely life-changing for me. And even though it did cause some issues, it gave me the life that I have and is much better than the life that I would have had in Mexico.
Well, it's good to have you here. And being a dreamer means what exactly for folks?
Right now, it means that you are eligible for DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. That's the more, I guess, widely used definition for a dreamer. But like I said, dreamers encompasses us who are eligible for DACA, as well as our parents or maybe siblings who are not eligible for DACA. I think Dreamers encompasses everybody, most people in the immigrant community.
And they're talking about, but originally with the change in the way the president interpreting the statute, is it's people who were brought to this country before they were the age of consent. So at 3 months, you're not really making a lot of decisions about it. But here you are, how many years later?
23 years later.
23 years later, and you've been raised in Flagstaff, right?
Correct, yep.
And so this gives you a pause and a chance to come out and say who you are and how long you've been here and to explain your work background and school and everything else. Who's next?
Hi, my name is Pamela Espinosa de los Monteros. I am the current Sedona Public Librarian that does Latino services and outreach. I'm originally from Mexico City. My parents immigrated to the States when I was 4 or 5 years old. My parents currently live in Tijuana, Baja California. Their backyard literally is the fence. And I also, in 2010, was awarded a Fulbright Garcia Robles Binational Business Fellowship, and it's awarded to people that are intended to promote better business relationships between the U.S. and Mexico.
And there's a tremendous – Mexico is in some ways our largest trading partner, right?
Yes. 22 states in the United States consider Mexico their number one export market.
Yes, and let's go to our next guest.
I'm Leah Mundell. I'm Director of Organizing for the Northern Arizona Interfaith Council, and I teach courses on immigration at NAU, Northern Arizona University.
And what is the council that you work with?
So NAIC is a broad-based community organization in Flagstaff and Sedona and Prescott, and we work on a range of issues. We're made up of congregations, schools, and nonprofits, and we come together based on the issues that our members feel are in their self-interest and where we can work together across lines of difference. And those are racial differences and class differences and religious differences. And the resolution that was recently passed at the Sedona City Council followed a resolution in Flagstaff, the very similar resolution. And both of those were organizing efforts of the Northern Arizona Interfaith Council.
Speaking of resolutions, in the Sedona City Council, we have a city councilor here. Barbara?
Hi, Steve. Hello, Mike. Yes, I'm really happy to be here. And the Sedona City Council on December 10th passed a resolution that urges our congressional representatives to pass comprehensive immigration reform. And what it does is establishes three principles that we ask them to use as guidelines, and that is the importance of families keeping families together and keeping families safe, the importance of the immigrant community in terms of economics and their importance to us in our community economically, and asks them to look at all of these areas, comprehensive immigration reform, and to really not put it off. I mean, we're all hearing that Congress is going to put it off, that Congress is stuck. And so this is a local voice urging our representatives that we elected to do their jobs. And so the Sedona City Council passed it on December 10th. And as a result, letters are going out to our representatives in Washington urging them to act on comprehensive immigration reform.
There's not a lot of detail to the proposal, right? It's really like get moving, guys.
It is, and it puts the emphasis on comprehensive immigration reform, not to take it apart piece by piece, but rather to look at it as a whole issue, a whole law that would be put into place.
And based on humanitarian kindness in terms of trying to solve these problems.
Yes, and recognizing the importance economically of immigrants to our community, recognizing the importance of the families to our community, since that's a big issue.
We're going to throw this open to the group, but we want to know what does comprehensive immigration reform look like? And I'm sure more than one of you have a response to that. Let's start with Ezekiel, the immigration lawyer.
Well, and before we go into that, I think you started earlier with regard to the resolution and how down in the coffee shop, people may say, well, why are we talking about this? Ironically, we're in Arizona, and Arizona took the stand nationally to make immigration a state issue with passing SB 1070. So it is the same argument that at the local and state level, we should take part of not only the conversation, but actually legislate with regard to that. So for all those critics or individuals who may say something with regard to that, the legislature, the state legislature here in Arizona essentially took those steps to do that into law. In terms of a comprehensive immigration reform, what it means to me and to most of the 11 million individuals that are in the country undocumented is a proposal from the federal government, from Congress, to cover families on its entirety. Individuals who are children, who are dreamers, who are parents, and individuals who have been removed that exist in the United States, or individuals who have been removed and it's, and are out in their own home countries right now, were separated from their families. That part is probably the most important to the community. In terms of the other parts of the a bill that was passed by the Senate this year but was not adopted by the House, we have a section of that bill that deals with border security, which is very important, particularly to the Republican side of the aisle in terms of having it included with the immigration reform. The other parts are talking about the industry, what Councilwoman talked about, the economic impact, the guest worker programs, the agricultural industry, and the high-skilled labor that we need in this country, such as electrical engineers and all of those individuals that build your cell phones that we don't know how they do it, but your emails appear every day in there, and thank God for them, that are graduating into these universities, getting PhDs, and then we don't have the ability to keep them in here to foment a growth, innovation, and continue to be the leaders of this global world now. And so to me, that is what the complete immigration proposal would look like. That is somewhat what the Senate passed. And as an attorney, what I would just wanted to continue to press on is what we needed more of in that bill is the waivers for individuals who violated the law that have an ability to take part in the process so that they can come back to their families.
Isn't that what you deal a lot with as an immigration attorney? I know I talked about talking about what immigration reform, a good bill would look like or a good law, but I want you to talk, what does an immigration attorney do? At least what does this immigration attorney do?
Well, this immigration attorney feels like an oncologist sometimes lately because I deal with a lot of my clients who come in to get a remedy, relief, and I can diagnose the issue, I can identify the source, but I can't cure it. And unfortunately, I see a lot of dismay, a lot of despair, a lot of sad stories of people who have been in our country, in this society, in your city, in your community, working, living, going to school, spending money, paying taxes, and unfortunately, for one reason or the other, are they find themselves in the deportation process. So it's a lot of the removal process. That's what it's called in immigration, a removal practice. I deal a lot with individuals who also, you know, came in as a student, got married, get a green card, things like that. But the majority of the polarizing part of my practice in terms of the political realm, and the one that it has the most emotion, is the one with regard to removal.
Let's ask Leo, what's your organization's idea of comprehensive immigration reform?
I want to say real quick that about Northern Arizona Interfaith Council that at least traditionally, and by traditionally I mean the last 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, the Arizona legislature isn't necessarily notorious for being responsive to the people of Arizona, but the Northern Arizona Interfaith Council has been extremely effective with this particular recalcitrant body down at the state legislature. And I think because of the issues that they bring and the organizations that the nonprofits and whatnot that are rolled up in the Northern Arizona Interfaith Council. So it's kind of an attaboy to that particular organization and the uniqueness of your organization that the Arizona legislature actually pays attention to some of the things that you bring them.
Well, and thank you. But I think that one of the reasons that we have been successful is that we bring together folks who are not used to being seen together. And I think that the Flagstaff the Sedona City Council and at the Flagstaff City Council votes, that was really evident. And in Sedona, the president of the Chamber of Commerce spoke, the head of human resources for Enchantment Resort spoke, and she talked about the fact that Enchantment tries to hire from within Sedona, and they always have open positions. They are always looking for workers, and that they are not able to get the workers that they need without immigration reform that allows people to be able to work legally. And I would just emphasize that piece of immigration reform as well, comprehensive immigration reform, that it has to, there has to be a way to acknowledge the labor needs of this country and then make it possible for people to come here and work legally. And I was telling a story this morning that I teach at NAU. I often have students who start my classes and say, well, I'm very conservative on this issue, and I think that I believe in the rule of law, and I think that people should come here legally. And they think that we really disagree somehow on those points. And yet, if we look at, for instance, the State Department website, you can actually go on the State Department website. Oh, he's looking it up. Ezekiel's looking it up to see what applications they are processing right now from Mexico, people who are trying to come here legally. And last time I looked, it was 1993. That is the date of applications that they are processing right now. So there is no legal way for people to come in that situation. And there should be a way for people to come here legally.
Well, that's it. I told a story last night about a white hockey player for one of the major teams, and it took him 15 years and $20,000 as a Canadian to become an American citizen. And forget about the politicized arena that we have now. But with Mexico and other countries, this guy, white guy that they wanted to get here for his sports talent, took him 15 years and a significant amount of money. Then it's what does it do for the rest of it? So the rule of law. I heard someone else say that
some of us don't consider hockey a sport.
Well,
or a major
you're from
sport.
Buffalo, New York. it's kind of in the DNA, although I couldn't tell you about the rules. I left too young. But but back there, it's a big deal. The rule of law, it used to be a conversation stopper. If this is where you were going to go with the conversation, well, then you're right. It's over. We are going to disagree. But you have found a way, Leah, to get around that and to get past that, which is great, because it was so important. The border security part of this, is so divisive, as far as I'm concerned, as a bleeding heart liberal. It's nothing but code to say, we don't want immigration reform. And so we're just going to talk about border security because we know that'll never happen. So we never have to worry about any immigration reform. But we know that's going to be a topic of a conversation. We trust in people like yourself and others to have the wit and the intelligence to not let that be a conversation stopper either. Frankie, what do you think about what is immigration reform, a total package?
I think it looks a lot like what Ezekiel said. I do agree that we do need to not leave our parents behind. There's been a lot of focus on the Dreamers, which I do believe is an important part of immigration reform, is to get legal status for Dreamers. But again, our parents are the original Dreamers, and they are the ones who brought us here and made the first steps to giving us a better life. And for the majority of our parents, that's really the only law that they broke, was coming here illegally and or overstaying their visas. For example, I can name countless people who didn't cross the border illegally, actually had a visa when they came or had a passport and ended up just overstaying because they had found such a better life. And I really don't know anybody who would get a taste of such a good life here in the U.S. and then decide to just go back to Mexico, knowing that if they try to come over legally, it's not going to happen for 10, 15, 20 years, possibly not in their lifetime. So, I do believe that border security is needed in the comprehensive immigration reform, just so that we get everybody on board. I think it's important for us to not forget about our parents, who, again, are the original Dreamers.
Yeah, and some of us are old enough to remember when the border was not militarized. When if you're in El Paso, say, well, let's go to Mexico and have lunch. I mean, it was not a big deal to go back and forth. And there was this free interchange of people. That was not that long ago. 50 years ago, that border was almost completely open. And I don't think we, I think we have more problems now that with the implications of the way they're trying to close it. You know, as forcing more people into the desert, people are getting hurt. People are half, the old days you walked across the border maybe and you stayed for however long you had a job and then you went back. But now everyone is, once you get over here, you're sort of forced to stay over here. If you want to get over here, you're forced to hire some crooks or bandits to get you over here who rape and rob so many people who are just trying to find a job where they're, thing. There's also implications in terms of, you know, what NAFTA has done to Mexico in terms of rural Mexico, poverty and stuff. Huge exports of American grain, of damaged small farmers in Mexico. It's a very, very complicated issue. Who wants to speak to it? Yeah.
Well, yes. So one of the more interesting things, actually, there's just a recent article that I read from Arizona State, and it was discussing how border security really hasn't helped, or it hasn't really stopped the immigration flow. The only thing that has been the economic recession. And there's a lot of reasons why Mexico population's large. We've seen large immigration waves. As you pointed out, NAFTA is very controversial. But what I would really like to talk about is this economic interdependence that we have between our two nations, and recognizing that this is the case, and we cannot look at immigration as just a national issue. It really is a binational issue. It's very necessary to look at not the symptom of immigration, but also to recognize how important our two economies really push this immigration wave.
Do you have some statistics, or am I putting you on the...
let me sift through
my notes. She's a librarian, folks. She's got lots of written material.
Sources. Yes, for the look.
But one of the things that I would like to say is that $1 billion of trade crosses the U.S.-Mexico border on a daily basis and sustains 6 million jobs in the U.S. And this is not limited just to border states. Mexico is the third ranked commercial partner of the U.S. It's the second largest market for U.S. exports. And what does that really mean? It means that Mexico spends $163 billion in U.S. goods. That's larger than all U.S. exports to Brazil, Russia, India, and China, as well as the combined sales to Great Britain, France, Belgium, and Netherlands. That's a very significant economic partner.
And I know you started with the NAFTA as being controversial and the dependency that we have. And I tell you that it's and it has to do with immigration as well, because for this, the Day of the Dead, I went to Veracruz, where I'm from, and I went to this place called Alto Lucero. There's a lot of ranchers in there, and I was eating with this family, and I was just so excited to be there, and they have cows and everything, and I said, wow, you know, you're dealing with the animals, and why don't you farm? Why don't you grow your, and he says, because we get the corn from the U.S., and it's becoming more expensive, to essentially grow ours. And then now it's becoming expensive to buy that one. And so what my kids are thinking about is going up north. And they didn't mean going to Tamaulipas. They meant going here, you know, because they although they have acres and acres of land, it is too expensive to produce. And so the dollar is so strong that leads all of those young, strong, healthy, you know, Mexican young guys to, you know, take the risk to go north. So it is all linked together. And as a community, as Sedona has taken the steps, we have to deal with this issue.
One of the community things that I want to mention, it's, you know, we're going from the national to, you know, the big to the small. But one of the cool things that I heard about is that with the program at West Sedona School, my degree is in ESL, And I did it for a while when it was funded at Yavapai College, but of course the funding went away. And I still get calls and I still get texts from students looking for language programs. You got a thing right here at West Sedona School, and I'm afraid to publicize it, because I know your resources are limited. But who can tell us, at least in brief, what's going on over there? Because I think it's a great community thing.
Well, it's a really exciting thing. And I think putting it in the context of programs at the community college is important because folks may not remember that when Prop 300 passed, which required undocumented students to pay out-of-state tuition, it also closed many adult education programs because adult ed programs could now no longer accept undocumented students. And so I was living in Tucson at the time, and we saw just the decimation of the adult education program. And this was the opportunity for immigrants to really become part of our community by learning English. So 3 years ago now, we started conversations through the Interfaith Council at West Sedona School with parents and teachers and members of the community who wanted to be involved about what challenges immigrant families were facing. And the principal at West Sedona, Lisa Hirsch, was concerned that there wasn't equity in participation among parents at the school. And for folks who may not realize it, West Sedona School is 50% Hispanic. And so it serves a very diverse population, and yet she felt that there was not equity across parent involvement. And parents who we spoke to said, we want to be able to help our kids with homework, we want to be able to be involved with the school, and we need to speak English to be able to do that. And so together they crafted a proposal to the school board to ask to get classes started, really on their terms, so that it was English classes and a homework club for kids and childcare all at the same time, so that it was a place for the whole family to come, and that's why it's called a family center. And the school board has supported that for the last couple of years for teachers for those programs, and we've seen tremendous support from the immigrant community who have really helped run the program, helped plan the curriculum, helped hire the teacher, and it's been a tremendous collaborative effort, and have started calling for more, and in fact would like to now start a GED class and continuing education program so that folks who want to be able to continue their education can do that here. And we're actually working very closely with the library and Pamela to get that started.
You guys did this with such little money.
Yes.
Such little money. Of course, as an educator, we're used to that.
Yes. And some wonderful volunteers.
And some wonderful volunteers. Yes. Yeah, I'm thinking of volunteering.
Good.
Sure.
Come Monday night, 6
Monday
o'clock.
All right. Yeah, no, I don't have a class Monday night. But we wanted to, we talked about the forum. We just, these four people that we've been talking in the studio today just presented to 75 of our friends and neighbors here in Sedona about immigration. And like we said, the Ann Kirkpatrick was there. She said she had learned some things. And I believe that was significant. I guess I want to ask, I keep going to the immigration attorney here, but what's our political chances? You know, we got this very human need going on and yet this very politicized activity, and boy, they just don't go good together. Ideology and action, things get done for the wrong reasons. But Ezekiel, what do you think the chances are of getting something in the next year?
Well, you know, believe it or not, I'm pretty optimistic about it. Not necessarily only because of the political spectrum, but because of the movement, because of the Dreamers, because of the librarians that are working with the community, because of the nonprofit institutions that are taking care of this, and the local officials that are taking part of the of the movement. I want to call it a movement because this is what it has to be in order to move. But what I wanted to address as well is, yes, we spoke to 75 of your closest friends that support this, and it's easy to do that. But for all of you who are listening right now, I don't know who it is. I don't know if it's all Sedona, all Arizona, all whatever it may be, that may be in sort of conflict with regard to the issue of immigration. That's what we have to resolve, the gridlock and polarizing of this. And I believe that whether it's the Senate or the House of Representatives, that the majority of both Democratic and Republican agree with this, they agree with this, and the only things that we're dealing with is a minority of individuals that want some of their stuff addressed. And then we can move forward with this. There was just a budget proposal that went through. So we're not going to have the distraction of a government shutdown or something like that to be peripheral to this argument. So we want to invite both Republican, everybody, Republican, Independent, and Democrat to partake in the conversation, to deal with the issue, to solve the economic and social issue, and then move on to grow a larger and stronger economy. And then, be prospered. So I wonder what the listeners that have, sort of a conflict with immigration, what would be something that they would like to hear? I don't know from.
Well, I think you'd hear, the law is the law. You violate the law. This is what I hear. Well, you violate the law.
Well, I will tell you
deserve
that.
What
as a lawyer,
get.
I'm going to tell you
that's
that
the argument.
There were laws before that would prohibit a individual from one race to marry another one of another race, and if we as a society listen to that law, we'd be in a horrible situation in terms of society. So laws are there to be to evolve and to change, and our society is also changing. And as a lawyer, I can tell you that no law will change without the social activism that is occurring. And so we also need to learn from our own history. So the law is a law, yes. And I guarantee you that if there's a law that you're watering your plants at 3 o'clock in the afternoon because somebody said it in 1975 when there was a lot more water than it is now, it has to change today. Why? Because we have to change that law. And it doesn't mean that the law is the law and that's what we have to do. That's why we have a body of legislators and congressmen and women to do that. So to get stuck in an argument is not to want to work in the issue.
The Constitution says very, very little about immigration, except if you're born in the United States, you're a citizen of the United States. And that's pretty clearly stated.
And Arizona wanted to do or change that as well. So the law is the law. It's very relative in the conversation.
And laws need to change. I mean, there was a law that enshrined slavery. There was a law. Women couldn't vote.
All right.
And so forth and so on. So you have to turn to deeper, more humanitarian things, Barbara. When you're framing your very general statement in favor of comprehensive immigration, you're talking a lot in that resolution about families, compassion, mm-hmm. Solving problems through compassion, through connectivity, rather than through divisiveness, like Ezekiel is talking about.
Exactly. And I think when we look at it on the local level, we talk about wanting to build community. And here in Sedona, where we have, 10,000 residents in the city of Sedona, we're always talking about outreach. We're talking about building community. But yet we spend a lot of our time on roads and drainage and on more of the bricks and mortar. And, I said this at council that night that when we're talking community, we really need to be talking about flesh and blood and our neighbors and looking around and seeing what is it we need to be doing in order to be the voice of the people and to be the voice of the people on issues that matter to them. And that's why I'm really proud that over the course of the last several months, the city of Sedona did pass a resolution on civil unions, recognizing civil unions. We passed the resolution now encouraging our congressional representatives to pass comprehensive immigration. I think we need to be looking at those things that affect the people in our communities, and whether or not our state legislature or our Washington representatives are moving in directions that matter to the people that we represent here. So I think it's really exciting that local representatives can actually represent our community to the larger political entities. And I'd like to see us do more of that.
One of the things we were doing earlier was Ezekiel and I were looking at the statistics. You're talking about law. As far as family applications for citizenship, they're processing 1993 applications. Some 94, depending on there's half a dozen categories of family and according to the immigration rules and laws. So, but they're all in, the most current one is 1996 and all the, now business applications, in other words, those people wanting to come in from, there's a half a dozen of those are current. In other words, they're right up to 2013. And so that obviously shows our priorities. I mean, we talk about family, at least as a from a conservative standpoint, and yet they don't back it up with the kinds of laws that keep families together and make the and make it possible. We have about 9 minutes left, and one of the things I'd like to get is Ezekiel's story, but on one of his clients, just to put a human face on this. But, Steve, what do you got?
I was just going to say that a couple of weeks ago we had Diane Post talking about prison system broadcast on the show. And one of the things that she pointed out is that when you have mass incarceration of people, there's a sort of tipping point where you begin to break down the community. The father who would support the family is in jail, or he's deported, or the mother is deported. The grandmother ends up taking care of the kids, so forth and so on. If you have enough of this, it begins to actually break down and keep communities from developing properly. When you keep the incarceration rate, and in Arizona, a lot of the incarceration rate is now a for-profit industry, which I know that at least the Methodist Church has condemned.
I'm just wondering, I would love, since this is mainly a Sedona station, I would love if Pamela could just add a few of her comments from this morning about the Sedona community, the Sedona immigrant community. Would you do that, Pamela?
Sure. So I'd like to stress that all Latino communities are often lumped together, but we don't tend to be homogeneous. There's very distinct characteristics that you will find from a community in Los Angeles to a community in the East Coast, and it's definitely here true in Sedona. So the Latino community of Sedona tends to be immigrants or first-generation born citizens that are children mostly. They come from rural areas, or smaller cities from Mexico. That is a very big change. I know anyone who will be listening to this that grew up in a small town in the U.S. of A. will think a very different experience than somebody who may have grown up in New York City. They tend to have educational challenges. I was talking to some of the teachers in West Sedona, and they estimate that their parents at the Head Start program are at the sixth grade level. And so when they're learning to speak English or ESL in their ESL classes, many of them are learning literacy skills in English, in a foreign language, for the first time.
One of our listeners asked, is there a program in the high school?
There is two additional ESL classes that are available in Sedona. One is actually in the library on Wednesday nights from 6:30 to 8. There's another class in the United Methodist Church that's from Tuesdays and Thursdays, and they also have excellent opportunities, just like the West Sedona Family Center.
And many of the families go to more than one class
exactly.
a week.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it was what I reached out to when I got those phone calls I talked about. It was all that, I want to say it was all that was left, but what was left was great and certainly helpful and essential, for the kinds of things that both sides want. Once again, Republican, Democrat, we want, functional families and functional, people that could work and support themselves and do all those things, and that's the, part of the method, the process, the path.
I think the thing that Republicans and Democrats and conservatives and liberals can agree on is that we don't want to damage families, and we don't want to damage the prospects of people who want to work to work. Those two things I think we can really agree on.
I want to add that the only candidate I've heard so far that declared for governor, the Democratic candidate Fred Duvall. I mean, one of the first words I heard on his campaign trail was about trade with Mexico and how much we were missing, that Texas has geared up and is just taking advantage of the recovery. California is taking advantage of recovery. Even New Mexico is taking advantage of the recovery. But Arizona's, first of all, its ability to take advantage of the recovery and perhaps its willingness. And I might add, and I know this is personal, on the other side, how receptive are they going to be to Arizona's overtures when this state was the one that created SB 1070, probably a law that was designed to attack both undocumented and, guess what, the bona fide American citizens that love them and related to them and live with them. And anybody that's spent any time in these communities with these friends and neighbors knows that it's not, you know, the rule of law is not clear cut. It's always cut with.
And it's made people who are American citizens afraid, worried about their grandmother or their grandmother. Do we want to go to Ezekiel? Tell us a story about, because Ezekiel's on the ground working with immigration cases every single day, working day of his life. He spends a lot of time in prison, but it's a team, not occupied.
And I'll do it in 2 minutes, 0.5. The production team is fantastic, by the way. So, to address the point of SB 1070, it was a lot to try to deal with the immigration issue by attrition, and that is in the first sentences of the bill. And it hasn't solved it. So it didn't work. It's not going to work. And what happens is when somebody is detained, and this is the story, Paradise Valley landscaper was detained last Friday. Father of five, paying child support on time for all of them, has five landscaping crews under his command. He's been here for 15 years or so. Has his spouse currently is having a baby. She's in a high-risk pregnancy. He gets detained. His mother died 5 years ago, so he went to Mexico to see her off. On his way back, he couldn't come in, so he purchased a fake green card at the border. He gets detained. He gets banned for 5 years. He comes back the next day, is found driving. He's expeditiously removed. That means he doesn't have rights to a court. He gets to Florence from Phoenix to Paradise Valley, Phoenix Eyes to Florence. Then they didn't have enough room in those private detention centers. They sent them to El Paso. Eventually, he's in New Mexico, Otero County, waiting for deportation. We went to try to stop it. I haven't received a notice yet. He was scheduled to leave yesterday, so they're reviewing that application. That individual is going to leave five hungry mouths. You, me, and the listener who's sitting there listening to me, disagreeing perhaps with me, is going to pay for that. And all of that business that was creating part of the economy, it's going to go down to shambles. So all of that is just a symptom of what we're talking about and we're not trying to resolve.
Anybody with a last comment before we head off the air? We want to thank everybody for coming in. And we tend to think of everything in terms of divisiveness now, right, Mike? And we don't look for areas of agreement. But I think on immigration, considering the history of the United States, we basically are pretty much, unless you're Native American, are all immigrants.
Well, there's lots of areas.
It's just a question of when.
I think of John McCain, the jefe Republican. As far as a lot of Latinos are concerned, this is the guy that spoke in favor of immigration until he stopped, from pressure from his party. But Ezekiel, we were talking before the show, Ronald Reagan and John McCain are heroes because they are the only people that have done anything. Ronald Reagan with his amnesty in the 80s, John McCain with his areas of agreement that any reasonable person could agree with on immigration, and the Democrats kind of mealy-mouth around and never get anything done. So hopefully, as we said, there are plenty of areas of agreement, both business and in family situations when it comes to immigration. That to finally get it done, the people in this room I know are going to put pressure all those people that they have any influence on, that actually are in a position to influence the decision and certainly hopefully they'll get some sort of critical mass going and get this one problem solved.
I think if we lens everything through competition and disagreement, we end up with competition and disagreement. If we look for possible connections and agreement, we have a chance to reach them.
We have Democrats of the Red Rocks to thank. We have Democrats of the Verde Valley to thank for a little help putting on Democratic perspective. We will be talking. We have our end of the year show coming up. We're going to talk about Robin Hood tax. We're going to talk about one of my favorite issues, by the way. We're going to talk about we'll talk about the year in review anyway. Underreported stories. Please tune in. We're going to talk about what other people don't.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.